Howdy, everybody. Today's show is brought to you by Christian Leader Community Coaching from my friend Ryan Franklin. The number one question that I get from listeners to this show is, Adam, you talk about increasing capacity. I know I need to grow. Where do I start? How do I do this? Ryan Franklin has put together an incredible coaching opportunity for you in a community full of fellow leaders that are here to support you. I have found that Christian Leader Community Coaching is what I needed because I find the three things that I need in order to increase capacity. Number one, I get to receive teaching through incredible professionally recorded courses that help me grow where I need it most. Number two, I find a community support group of friends and fellow leaders on Christian Leader Community Coaching that are all pulling in the same direction I am. And they support me, and I have a chance to support them. And number three, Ryan has these amazing community coaching calls where you can jump in the hot seat, receive one-to-one coaching in a small group setting, and then also receive teaching and training along some other subjects. It's absolutely incredible. It's where I'm growing. It's how I'm increasing capacity. And I would love for you to join me. Here's all you got to do. Number one, go to ryanfranklin.org/Adam Shaw for a quick risk-free entrance to the community. Link is in the show notes. Number two, you follow Ryan's onboarding plan. And when you take that onboarding, kind of quiz, it's like a personality test kind of thing. And you answer some questions, Ryan will be able to tell you the top three areas you need to grow. Number three, you work the plan. Ryan will put together a plan for you, telling you what videos to watch first, what things you need to work on. And then you connect with the community and you jump onto those Zoom calls and you become part of the Christian Leader Community Coaching family. And it's going to be so great. I know it's going to impact you. Listen, Ephesians 5, 15 through 16 says to walk carefully. Don't be unwise. Make the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. You have a limited time. You have a limited lifespan, and we have limited opportunities to make an impact on this world. So let's maximize that impact together by increasing capacity and growing and working on ourselves. And so go to ryanfranklin.org/Adam Shaw. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee. If it doesn't help you and you're not growing, Ryan will give you your money back. So there's absolutely no risk. Join today. I'd love to see and interact with you inside the Christian Leader Community Coaching. Now back to today's show. My name is Adam Shaw, and this is The Restorationist. Well, hey, everybody. Thank you for joining me today. Listen, if you're a leader like me and you're looking around at your church, maybe you're a senior pastor like me, or you serve on a church staff, or you're just a leader in a local church and you're looking around at the people in your church and then you're looking around at the people in your community, whether you are in a densely packed city like me or a spread out rural area, you've probably come to the conclusion that, oh my goodness, there are way more people in this town that have not heard about Jesus than are in my church. And we need to grow, but it feels like standing in between you and where you want to grow and the revival you want to see is this invisible barrier that's keeping you stuck where you are. If that's you, listen to this episode today, because we have a guest that has shattered not just one, but two major growth barriers in his church. I was reading a stat the other day from Lifeway Research, and this survey is recent. It's from November 2022, post-COVID. And here's what we discovered. 31% of all churches in America are under 50. 37% are under 99. 24% are between 100 and 249, and only 8% of churches in the United States are over 250 people. And so I've got a pretty good feeling, a pretty good gut impression here that if you're listening to this episode, you're probably part of the vast majority of individuals that lead, work, and serve in churches of under 200 individuals. And today's guest knows what it's like to serve in a church and feel like there is a barrier between you and the revival God wants to send you. And he has shattered not just the 200 barrier, but he has also shattered the 400 barrier and currently has over 600 people in attendance between two campuses every single Sunday. Today's guest You probably saw it in the title, but just so you know, today's guest is my very good friend, an incredible leader, an amazing pastor, an even better Christian, Pastor Chantry Dean. He's the lead pastor at Calvary Church with a pastoral journey spanning over 26 years, starting as a student pastor. Chantry, along with his wife Heather, have been instrumental in guiding the church community. His influence extends beyond the local church. He's a sought-after speaker at various national, international events because he's come and preached at my church here in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. He's dedicated to his family, including his daughter Ava. Pastor Chantry is passionate about leading people towards Christ and inspiring spiritual growth both in Northwest Arkansas and across the country. And today he's here to walk us step by step through the changes that had to happen in his church, had to happen inside of him and in his congregation as he led his church through the 200 and 400 barrier. And the sky is the limit with what Pastor Chantry is going to do with the help of the Holy Ghost and his amazing team at Calvary Church in Bentonville. And today, without any further ado, let's jump right into our conversation about breaking growth barriers with Pastor Chantry Dean. Well, hey, Pastor Chantry, it's so great to have you on The Restorationist. I'm so pumped. You and I have been friends for a long time.
Yes,
and,
we have.
We've had a lot of great and fun experiences, hilarious experiences together. We were talking before we start recording, and we will not go down this rabbit trail, but it was like the time that I was severely ill and I came to Arkansas for a hyphen retreat that I don't even remember if it happened. We've been friends for years. We had a lot of great experiences together, but I'm so pumped you're here to talk to us about the growth that's been happening at your church. And so give us a brief history of the church in Bentonville and what God has done and now kind of what God's doing. And we'll talk about overcoming and breaking growth barriers throughout the course of our conversation today.
Sure. First of all, it's an honor to be here and thank you for the invitation. Your podcast has helped so many and globally, and impacts, no doubt, lives and churches and teams. So it's an honor to be here, and thank you for this opportunity. Our church started in the summer of 1964. So it's this year is 60 years, pretty exciting. But 1964 was the inception, and then my dad, who was also my pastor, arrived in 1974. And he pastored until 2016. So 41 years he was pastor here. And then my wife and I, we became pastor in 2016. So this February is 8 years that we will be pastor. And for many, many years, we were at 125. We just could not break through that barrier, that growth barrier. And so finally, we reached 175, and that's what it was when we became pastor. It was 175 people. So that's a little bit of the history.
So you became pastor at churches around 175. You broke that 125. That breaking 100 barrier is pretty hard, getting past, getting into that 100, 125. And then you kind of parked at 175 for a while. And so what did you do, or how did you guys break 200? That's because that's like the next kind of growth barrier for most churches. And most churches never get beyond 100. And so if you get beyond 100 and then you break 200, you're doing something right.
Yeah.
So how did you guys break 200?
That's a good question. I remember us praying and reaching for that number for so many years. And so it was an exciting day when we did, we broke through that. But our journey beyond 200, it involved intentional cultural shifts. So we recognized, you know, that for us to get past a certain number, that we were going to have to culturally shift some things. And so we started looking into that more closely, recognizing healthy cultures, you see that, okay, something good is happening here, but how do we culturally change some things to help us get to that next level? And so we made concerted efforts to articulate values and ensuring that they shaped our church's culture, because values shape culture. Whatever you value is what culture you're going to end up having. So this process influenced our actions and our behaviors, which then fostered an environment for growth. And so we started, basically we started putting structures in place to help us facilitate our vision. So we defined our vision, and there's been, you know, various forms of that vision now where we've landed. There's been different iterations of that, but now where we are is a result of many years of tweaking that. But we started at that point, we started really trying to articulate our vision, our goal, what we wanted to be as a church, you know, what our focus needed to be. And when we started articulating those values and those goals, and we started structuring around those, it brought clarity to the body, to the church, and people got excited and started getting behind it. But without clearly articulated values and goals, they don't know what we're reaching for. You know, they don't know what we're aiming for. And so we started just taking a close look into that. And then from there, we started some structure and ministry revitalization. I mean, it was revitalization. It was we started prioritizing certain areas that would then help us facilitate these values, if that makes sense. We prioritize intentional structural changes, and this involved the strategic addition and maintenance of organizational frameworks. So we evaluated and we updated existing ministries, and we ensured that they would align with our evolving vision. So worship services, they even went a transformative revamp, because we just were like, okay, is there anything that we're doing that's maybe causing us to miss the mark and reaching our goal? And so we even reassessed how we planned our services, how the service flow went. So even things like that, we just tried to take a look at every area and make sure that once we articulated those values, that they fit within that framework. Does that make sense?
So let's drill into that just a little bit. So what were some of the values that you started kind of instilling within your leadership team? And I know values may be unique from one organization or one church to the next, but what were some of the values that you started instilling within the life of the church that they had to adopt in order for them to see vision clearly and embrace the practical changes that were coming?
Sure. That's a good question. We here, the demographic, we have a lot of young families, and you know, first of all is our faith. First of all is our, you know, who we are and our belief. And so we wanted to emphasize, obviously, always faith. And so that was one of our first values, was our faith is important to us. And then our second was family. And then our third was community. And, you know, if your values are too long, if they're, I've heard it said, if they're not tweetable, then they're probably too long, you know, and that's true, because you want it to be able to be recited and easy to remember by even your kids in your church, you know. And we've got kids to this day that can recite it, because we're saying it all the time. It's three main things, and it's faith, family, and community. And so those were our values, with a mission of being disciples who make disciples. And so that summed up who we are, what we are about, and who we're reaching for. And so if within those three things, everything that we do has to flow and fit within one of those categories, or we don't feel like it's conducive to us. So even in our ministry, you know, groups and everything, Do they help? Do they help build our faith? Do they strengthen our families? Do they impact our communities? And so that's the framework in which we flow and we operate in all things that we do here. And with those articulated values, you know, it helps us to know what we're aiming for.
So you've instilled those values. You started casting vision. This is what we're about, faith, family, community.
That's right.
And then you mentioned we started revitalizing some ministries and even our worship service. And just to give an example, what, you know, off the top of your head, what were some of those big restructures to either legacy ministry, whether it's kids or youth or even the main worship service? What were some of the big things you guys started doing differently? You mentioned flow, you know, changing the flow of the service. What were some things you guys started doing? You're like, okay, this is going to help this guest experience. It's going to help people get more plugged into the presence of the Lord and experiencing Jesus. What were some of those changes that changed that culture?
Sure. We took a hard look at, you know, are there any distractions or anything, is there anything that we're doing that are, it's more distracting than it is, you know, helping the service experience and people being able to come in and get locked in and feel God and encounter God. So, you know, even things like how we did announcements. You know, for many, many years, you know, and I was a part of doing those announcements, you know, we would get up and I've noticed, and probably all of us noticed, that when somebody is talking, just giving announcements, there's more room for just off the cuff things to happen and, you know, ad-libbing and saying things. And so announcements were ending up being like 10 minutes, you know, and just something as simple as that, we started looking at it and saying, how can we make this more effective where people will pay attention to those announcements, but then it helps within the service flow to get to what we're really trying to get to, and that's worship and the word, and then that response to that word. And so we started streamlining those, and we started actually recording those announcements and pre-recording those ahead of time, and it really helps stay on track, and people pay attention to those more. And so that's something very simple, but that's something that we did to even help with service flow. You know, our countdown videos kind of helped with getting people's focus, but we didn't have that in the beginning. You know, in the very beginning, we were just trying to look at things we were doing in service. Are these necessary? Are they not necessary? Are these getting us to where we're trying to go? And if they didn't, then we weren't afraid to say, okay, maybe it's time to move that or change that or even get rid of that.
This is great. I mean, this is great for our audience. This is really great for me because I am exactly where you were several years ago. Before we hit record, As of right now, it depends on when we release this episode, maybe in February. I'm looking at my calendar here, 26 days on the job as the senior pastor, lead pastor of our church. And thank you very much. Really excited. And we're going through a similar process. Now, we had made some changes before COVID in Canada was crazy. And so we made it. Actually was good because, you know, we had to overhaul our entire service as a result, and it gave us that streamline and that focus. And so, but this is really great feedback. I have a follow up kind of question around this breaking 200, and we've talked about communicating values, talked about looking at everything that was happening in the church and going, is this a hindrance, a distraction, or a help to breaking 200. But my next question for you is, probably a lot of things had to change in you too, Chantry. In order for you to break 200, there may have been some things that had to change in you and not just in the church. What were some of the things in you as a leader that had to evolve and adapt to see a break 200?
Sure, that's great. So In me, what had to change is I went through a very transformative process through all of this. As probably all of us who, you know, are leading or are pastoring a smaller congregation, you are used to doing everything. You know, you have to. And you maybe don't have the volunteer base or the help that you need, for sure not the paid staff at that point in time. And so as we started growing, I remember going to my pastor, who was also my dad, and we've always had a great relationship. And I went to him and I said, you know, I'm willing to help with even more. You know, let's just talk through what you need and what our church needs are, and I'll be willing to help. And I do want to say this, that, you know, we broke the 200 growth barrier before I was pastor. I was pastor, we did, but we were on that track of breaking that before I was pastor, because my father was a visionary and he wanted growth. He always was a revivalist and he wanted to see that happen. And he was always willing to hear ideas and allow people that were willing to come alongside of him and work with him. And I remember going to him and saying, you know, what can I do to help you? You know, I want to help you in seeing this revival that we know God has promised us. And so we started talking, and I remember going to every conference I could go to, getting my hands on as much material as I could get. I talked to several leaders from different sized churches, and started putting together flow charts and organizational charts, you know, and all of that for our church. We didn't have any of that. And that was the structuring piece that I talked about earlier. And then I remember in my mid-20s, I was youth pastor, but I was also that guy that, you know, when it's basically you and your pastor, or you, it's me and my dad at that point, and our family,
yep,
we did everything.
Yep.
And so I remember going to him and saying, okay, let's try some things. And he said, okay, you know, let's try it. And I remember getting our little volunteer base together, which was very small, and having a meeting for the first time. And I had printed out an organizational chart with our volunteers, and they were looking at me like I had lost my mind, because here we were, you know, a church of 175, and, you know, we're just doing good to have midweek and weekend services. And so I remember them looking at me like, you know, you're this young guy, you're eager, but we're not sure about this, you know. But what's neat is we stayed with that. We just kept pushing that vision, clarifying that vision. And then I brought accountability measures into place with them, and I would follow up with them and have meetings with them and celebrate them, you know, thank them for what they did do. So we started on that in that kind of place, you know, and recognizing that crucial role of accountability in preventing ministry underperformance was huge for us. We implemented measures to ensure transparency and responsibility. We started giving them more of a voice, you know, and we started having a monthly meeting with our volunteers. We would give them a voice to speak to whatever they were over or leading or involved in. And this not only upheld the standards of our services, but also contributed to the overall health of the church. And so as a leader personally, when I started, we started growing and seeing things happen. When it got to that 200, we broke through that. Actually, we shattered that. Once it happened and it was big. And it happened fast, and it never stopped. So it was a fast change for us, and it was a little overwhelming, to be honest. But as a leader, I went this transformative process, and I had to acknowledge the necessity of letting go of control. For so long, my dad and I had controlled. We had to. We were the only ones, and we were the ones in control of all these things, leading all these things, like having these conversations with all these people. But as we started growing, we started bringing in people to help us, and we had to let go of more and more control. And I remember the day that it just occurred to me that I don't have to be over all of this. Matter of fact, I can't be for it to succeed. And I entrusted others with leadership responsibilities. And I empowered individuals to lead, and it allowed them to make mistakes, and it provided, you know, an opportunity for them to grow through those mistakes. And we would have tag-ins about those mistakes, and with some gentle guidance, you know, I would talk through, what did you learn here? What did you gain from that failure? You know, let's talk through that. And so through that, I learned a lot. You know, I fell a lot. I made a lot of mistakes. And we all talked about those together. It wasn't like, you know, I know what's right, you don't, and I'm the one telling you everything you need to do. We actually collaborated even about the opportunities, that how we could get better. Matter of fact, that's what we call them, wins and opportunities, because there's always going to be opportunities for us to get stronger and get better. So, you know, I had to embrace diverse perspectives, and it became a priority. And as I invited voices that didn't sound like mine to the table, I had to relinquish more and more control and give them more of a voice. And obviously, they all, at the end of the day, the final decision is mine. They always point it back to me, but I've always respected, you know, who's at the table. As we broke that 200 barrier, that was a big learning curve for me. It's just how to continue to relinquish control and trust others and allow them to have a voice.
So what were some of the, now this is probably an easy question, maybe the easiest question of the interview. What were the good things that happened? What were the good things that happened as a result of breaking 200? Where you showed up, you said it happened fast. It was like when you got up and it was like the third Sunday in a row and you're like, oh man, there's way more people here than there was 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What were some of the good things that happened?
There were so many great things, and what an exciting season for a church, you know, when something you've prayed for so long, it just all of a sudden, it's like, boom, it happens and it continues to happen. You know, there was a renewed sense of purpose and energy. Breaking the 200 barrier, it really injected a renewed sense of energy and purpose into the church and into our volunteers. You know, our people felt a deeper connection to the mission because they were seeing it unfold. You know, so they're like, hey, this is working. And it fostered a shared commitment to that growth. It was quite exciting to see us break a barrier that we had been praying for so long. And when we broke through that, man, the excitement and then the volunteer like response went up because, you know, it's like, okay, this is happening and I want to be a part of this. So I think timing is everything as well. You know, when you start gaining momentum, it's important to capitalize on those moments. And so many times we are scared to take that next step because maybe we're not sure. For instance, some of the staff we hired, we weren't quite there financially, but we had momentum and we were growing. And so we said, well, we're just going to step out in faith and bring this person on. And as soon as we did, it's like we grew another 25 or another 50 people because that brought on another person to the team that helped with facilitate that growth, you know, and bring that structure and that voice and another ministry lead to the table. You know, we've all heard it said that, and there's different, I think there's different takes on this, but one of the things that I've always heard and read is that a pastor, one person can only effectively lead, you know, I think it's 100. There's different people that think it's less, a little bit more by themselves. And I think you could do more, but at the same time, are we doing it well? And is everything happening at the church that could happen if it's just us? And so even before we could financially afford to bring somebody on, we were empowering people that were just volunteers to step up and lead.
Yeah.
And that momentum, when we hit 200 and broke it, it was so exciting that people were willing to step up. And we celebrated every victory, you know, big or small. Our outreach efforts expanded. It excited people to go invite people to church because we were seeing exciting things happen at church. And yeah. So outreach efforts expanded. It reached a broader audience. And then simultaneously, internal connections were strengthened as people found these new avenues for involvement and engagement within the church. And so that was exciting. And then that increased volunteerism was very exciting. We just had more individuals actively participating in various aspects of the church life, which then helped strengthen the structure of the church.
Now, we've talked about everything great. You worked with your dad, like I did. There's a lot of different things. The way your father's wired, it's very similar. Open to ideas, yeah. Was willing to let me just try. Like, looking back at some of the stuff he let me try. Like, I'm just gonna be honest with you. I never let anybody do that now. I was like, that was dumb.
I know. I feel the same.
It's like I look back at some of the things I wrote down the same way that I look back at my Facebook post from 2006. And I was like, what in the world was I thinking? Like, yeah. So you built this momentum, you became pastor, you underwent an internal transformation as a leader and instead of just you leading through others. So kind of to borrow the, you know, from the single solo shepherd to a rancher model of a shepherd leading through shepherds.
Yeah.
And then you've got this energy and momentum and people are building better relationships with one another. And you've shattered a growth barrier that most churches don't ever get to break. But there's also, in my experience, there's challenges with growth and challenges with revival and breakthrough. What were some of the things that were unexpected? Because I think sometimes that people, when they've been struggling for so long to see revival in their church or growth in their church or break a barrier, and they think like when we reach this magical land of 85 or 100 or 200, then, oh man, it's like all this drama that I've dealt with before, like it's going to be gone. I know that's not the case. What were some of the unexpected challenges of breaking the 200 barrier?
Yeah, well, more people, more problems, right? And
just the way you said that, it sounded tired. More people, more problems.
It's true. It's just, and you know, more new people, more challenges, because discipleship is always going to be a great need. And it seems like you never have enough hands to facilitate that. Especially if you're having fast growth, and we did. So that was a challenge. I would say managing all the different ministries and even staff, you know, keeping everybody on the same page and moving in the same direction, because there's challenges, different challenges in each ministry. And so, that's a challenge. That's hard. That's difficult, while still trying to promote that vision and keep that excitement level up. And that was a challenge, because once you break that, it's like, okay, we're here and it's going good. But at some point in time, you hit a little bit of a lull and you're trying to keep that momentum and keep the excitement, especially in your teams, in your volunteers, because they're the ones that are giving so much to that vision, you know, on a day-to-day basis and a week-in, week-out basis. So that was a challenge.
So before we continue on with the podcast, this episode is brought to you by Christian Leader Community Coaching. Are you a Christian leader who is overwhelmed by the complexity of trying to figure out how to grow your team? I want to introduce to you our Christian Leader Community Coaching program. We have an easy to use online platform that has a full archive of courses, supportive community, live group coaching, and elements that are customizable specifically for your team. And I've personally seen the quick and enormous impact that it can have on a team of leaders who are focused together on learning and mastering the skills needed to grow their leadership effectiveness and enjoyment. And we want to be a part of that with you. We want to help you create and implement a plan. The community is very much affordable, but I would say that you can't afford not to have focused growth within your team. Your results heavily depend on it. So don't wait any longer. Let's do this together. Go to ryanfranklin.org and join Christian Leader Community Coaching today. I look forward to seeing you and your team inside the community. And now, back to our podcast.
I don't know how exactly it happened, which I mean, you're about to tell us how it all happened. From there, you exploded into this stratosphere of 500 plus. And I know that it happened across two locations. And so without, just kind of give us the story of, okay, now Bentonville is at 200 and we're pushing beyond 200 and we're dealing with the challenges and we're dealing with the excitement and we're dealing with the growth. But I know that 400, 450, getting from 200 to 400, 450, 500 plus, and you'll be able to give us the exact numbers there.
Yeah.
Talk to us what led up to, you know, you walking into church and you're like, oh, wow, there's 450 people here today. And so walk us through that, and then we'll get into the weeds on the structural and personnel sure. changes and all that stuff that's going to happen. But just walk us through that 200 to 400.
Okay, I will do my best to give you a clear picture of this, and I hope I can. It was an explosive growth. Once we broke 200, like I said earlier, it just did not seem to slow down. And every time we turned around, it was like a new number every Sunday. And wow. That was that way for a long time. This excitement and this momentum and people inviting others and friends and family. And so they just kept showing up, you know, new people every week. And our building is not huge. We're limited. I mean, it's not tiny, but it wasn't large enough to facilitate that kind of quick growth. So we started seeing all of our classrooms jam-packed, you know. Our parking became a challenge. Our seating was getting tight. We could seat comfortably. We could seat, you know, 250s, 275. We have a little balcony and we could cram some more people up there and maybe get 300, but it was pushing it and people were uncomfortable to do that. And so I remember the Sunday that I looked up and thought, oh my word, we've got to do something. Our balcony was full. We were wall to wall, front to back. We had the ushers told me after the service that we had people pulling in our parking lot, guests, and they would pull in and leave because they had nowhere to park. And what an awesome problem, but a problem nonetheless.
And it's still a problem.
It's still a problem, and it was for us. And so it was really exciting. I can't even really articulate how from 200 to, you know, 275, where we started feeling the pressure of that building, I can't even explain to you or articulate properly how exactly that went down. It happened so fast. But we had structure in place, thankfully. We had people in place, thankfully. We were actually ahead of that growth with some of our organizational structure. You know, we had brought in an amazing hire, an individual who we brought in for our music and worship, but administratively just was a beast. And he started on the back end with our systems and with, you know, tracking metrics and keeping track with our discipleship and follow-up processes, started really helping clean that up and helping us to, you know, stay in touch with these people better. And so that obviously helped with growth. And then assigning, you know, people to follow up with them. And just that whole structural organizational process was shored up on the back end. I will say too, going backwards, some of the growth too was simply updating like website, you know, our social media presence and people recognizing in this area, it's a corporate area, you know, it's home of Walmart, number one retailer in the world. Their headquarters is here. And we have a lot of young families move in that are corporate minded. And so social media presence was a big deal. Even back then, they looked for churches through social media. So we had to really vamp that up and make sure that who we are was clearly articulated, our goals, our mission. And so we started doing that, and it really helped with that growth. I would say that was a big contributor. The structure was in place organizationally. We kept bringing in voices and people as we could to help every time we would hit a certain number. You know, we would realize, okay, we need somebody to step into this area of ministry to help growth, you know? And so as we did that, I mean, it just kept growing, and I looked up and I see this and talked to our team and said, we're going to have to do multiple services. We're going to have to do something. And we started exploring the mirrored service concept, and started talking to people who had done that and getting ideas and picking their brains, and started, you know, teaching about it at our church. We started talking about it, preaching about it, change and, you know, the growth mindset in the church, and getting people prepared to do something way out of the box for us. I mean, we were Sunday morning, Sunday night for, my goodness, over 50, you know, like it's like 48 years or something, 49 years prior to that. And so it was a change, it's a big change. But we started talking to people that had done this, and we thought, okay, we can't afford, we still were in debt. We still had some things to pay off with an addition we had added on, built to our existing building. And so we couldn't build at that time. So we had to look at other options. And so we ended up presenting that to the church. They were super excited about it. We said we're going to do some test services and leading up to Easter, because we knew our Easter crowd was going to just be too full, too big for the building. And we had a service the end of January. Let's see, it was in 18. And we said we're going to do a test service with these mirrored services. End of 18, we did that, and it was, both services were full. I don't even know how to explain it. It was so exciting. And we said, we can't wait till Easter. I mean, people were so excited that we jumped into it. We had prepared our volunteers, you know, we had trained, we had leading up to that, gone through training and how to do two services and all of that, had our structure in place. And so then when we did that test service, it was so great that people were ready. And I mean, that service, I just said, we were going to wait, but we're in it. We're in it from here on out. And so we've been in two services for 6 years now, and just tremendous growth, you know, great excitement. The hard and challenging part of that is after, you know, a while, obviously your volunteers get tired because they're here for a long time on a Sunday, even with rotating teams. But there's still excitement after 6 years because you're seeing new people every Sunday. We average about 50 guests a month that come through here, and we've hit upwards of 80 several times. First time guests coming through our doors. I think last month we had like 50 something first time guests. So it just is exciting, and people see that, and it's tremendous. And so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it happened. Just to give you a little backstory of how we're here.
So we've already kind of touched on the identical services. That was obviously a major structural change.
Oh, big time for us. Yeah.
That had to take place. But were there any other structural or personnel changes, like people you had to add on or bring onto the team? What were the things that you realized as you were pushing past 200, getting into 300, you know, pushing past 300, knocking on the door of 400? And then I think eventually you added another campus, at some point. And what was that? Walk us through some of those other additional changes that you made between just adding the other service. What were some of the other things that took place too?
Yeah. So, I will say that with each step of growth, as you grow, you know, like even administratively, we had administrative enhancements, meaning we had to implement more sophisticated administrative tools to streamline operations, you know, to make that a smoother process and manage the complexities of a larger congregation. You know, when we were smaller, we always promoted and said to our volunteers and our leaders, we can't think small. You know, when we were at 200, we were always saying, you got to think like you're 500. We got to plan like we're 500. Then when you hit that number, you're like, okay, we actually need administrative tools to be able to facilitate this many people, you know, and keep track of it. And so we had to update a lot of those things as well. And then communication and organization had to be beefed up. Enhancing communication and organization became paramount to effectively manage the increased size and the diversity of the church as a whole. And then we did the two services to accommodate that larger congregation. I had a friend of mine who had started a church in a nearby town from the ground up. He started a church, had pastored it 10 years, and felt a shift in their ministry. And he called me up. He knew that we had brought in a couple because I felt like God had spoken to me a couple years prior that we were going to be not only a multi-ethnic, multi-generational, but a multi-campus church. And I didn't know exactly what that looked like or meant, but trying to, once again, get ahead of that. God began to orchestrate and put things in place, and there was an awesome couple that came for a year, was with us. And this friend of mine and I had conversations about us being multi-campus. And when they felt that shift to do something different, he contacted me and said, I've been praying about this. Would you guys consider taking on the church as another campus? And so we prayed about it, talked to our team and our board about it. And we felt like that couple that God put, you know, in place here a year prior, who had learned our church culture, was around us, that was all God orchestrated. And so we agreed, and that couple is now over there pastoring that church. And we sent a small team with them to help with music, to help with sound, you know, to help with different areas. And man, it has been amazing to see what God has done. And so between that campus and ours, we're now just over 600 between those two campuses. And so God has really blessed that. And it's really, really been exciting. Now they have their own team, and God is really blessed. And very rarely do we even have to send anybody over there to help. Every now and then, maybe a musician or something like that. But it's really been exciting to see. So that is another aspect of that growth to 500 and beyond that we saw, and that we embraced.
And so what were, if just to go back to, because I know people will want kind of examples or things to look to.
You said,
man, we had to beef up our communication, and we had to beef up our administrative. We had to get more sophisticated tools. And I know you had people in place to take care of that for you so that you could be the lead pastor and visioneer for the organization. But what were some of those What were some of the things you're like, we need a more complicated system for this, or we need more complicated tools?
Yeah.
How did you beef up communication? What did that kind of look like? So people can get ideas in their head as to what that concept, how that concept manifested itself.
That's a good question. And I'll do my best. Obviously, there's some of the names of these systems that I'm not even, I mean, I don't remember all the ones we went through. We went through a few.
Yeah.
But like Planning Center Online, we use that currently, but we tried some different systems before, but they kind of stopped at a certain number, you know? So like they would only be good up to 250 people or, you know, 300 people. So we had to kind of revamp that. Planning Center Online, like on the back end, you can, for a cost, you can up that number of management, you know, 500, 600, 700, 800, 1,000. And so even paying a little extra, and that was something I was going to speak to, is, you know, we had to look at some of these things as a necessary expense. And it was hard at first because you're spending a little bit of money on things that nobody ever sees, right? But at the same time, it helps you to be able to structurally handle that growth and continue to bring structure, you know, to that growth. So it was worth it. And even online giving, you know, something as simple as that, and paying that expense in this day and age and with the kind of demographic that we had, changed our giving completely. I remember the first year we went to online giving, we had a 44% increase in our giving that first year. And it was just because of, you know, accessibility and people being able to automatically, you know, set that up like they do every other bill, you know, for the most part.
Yeah.
But just things like that, even, you know, structurally that we were able at certain junctures were able to do, you know, in the very beginning, it was like spreadsheets, you know, it's like, that's how basic it was. I mean, it was like, you know, managing from spreadsheets because we were at 175, we couldn't afford some of those more expensive administrative tools or softwares. But as we got to those numbers, that's what I was meaning. As we got to those numbers, we were willing and able to pay and get those helps to help us with structure. If that answers your question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It does. And it kind of segues right into my next question. And that is, you know, it's the same one we asked at 200. It sounds like that you in particular to break that 200 barrier, you had to undergo a deep personal transformation as far as moving from the single point leader that did a lot, managed a lot, handled a lot to leading through other leaders where you released control of segments of the organization over to them. And then they went and executed your vision. Obviously the buck stopped with you. You weren't oblivious to what was happening. But it was this, it was leading through others. Now going from 2 to 450 and then with another congregation bringing you to 600 plus, were there any other ways that Pastor Chantry Dean had to evolve as you went from that 275 to 400 plus in a single location and then 600 with the addition of a second location? What other things in you had to change that when we bring that kind of growth to the forefront?
Yeah, I had to become more adept at navigating, you know, complex administrative tasks, fostering, you know, a collaborative and community. Better communicating to my team, and leading with a heightened awareness of the diverse needs within the team, because the team became even more important. The leaders of ministries, as you grow, become even more important. It's like, you know, the disciples who were closest to Jesus, there's a reason for that, you know, and he trained and equipped and poured into them to then go and facilitate, you know, and that vision, right? The gospel. And then they did the same. It was passed down. And so that's the same way in a church kind of structure. As you grow, obviously the one person cannot have eyes on everything. I cannot hear everything going on. So I have to pass that vision down to my team leads and my staff, and then they pass it down to their teams. That vision is being carried out through everything that they do. And so for me, that challenge was, again, getting better at communicating and still working on that. You know, I mean,
yeah,
that's an ongoing thing. And having honest and open conversations with staff members and with team leaders, that opportunity is vitally important. For instance, you know, we're meeting twice a month at this point. In the beginning, we even met more because it needed more. We were learning. We were still very new at all of it. And we met weekly on a Tuesday night and with our team leads and these people that were leading these teams. And we would tag in. There was conversation. There was communication. There was accountability. And even having like department head meeting once a month or once a quarter is vitally important, because even beyond your immediate staff and team lead, you want to give them a voice because they're the ones that are boots on the ground, you know, most of the time, week to week. So that's something that we had to get better at and continue to give a voice to, communicate well, administrating team, administrating, you know, staffing. So that was a big change and shift, and I'm still working on several things in that regard. But, you know, fostering that collaborative environment and allowing people to have a voice, but then being able to make sure that whatever it is that I'm feeling God speak to us as a church, it's being communicated with those team leaders, and then with their staffs, it's being passed down so that then it's getting into the church, you know? Yeah. So they're hearing it, not just from the pulpit, but then even in their areas of ministry, that vision, you know, the will of God, hopefully is being carried out throughout. And, you know, we have a thing in our meetings that we want to be spirit led. We pray. And then when we pray and God speaks, then we prepare. And in our preparation, it's good to have a plan and prepare, but then there's got to be execution and follow through. And then there's accountability in place, you know, for that, those plans to be executed. And so that's the process, which then helps ensure things are getting done and people are being touched and lives are being impacted. Bible studies are being taught, you know. Without that, as you grow, things can get lost in the growth. You know, people can just come and sit on a pew if you're not careful. And so we try to really be open and communicating and have systems in place to track that growth.
I want to follow up with I didn't write this question down. This has just been something I've been thinking about. You know, a lot of the things that you're saying are really clicking with this transition. Steph and I have been saying to our team that we want to take care of people who take care of people, that the only way that our church is going to grow is if we invest in the leaders that are leading our church and make them a priority. But when you have, like you said, when you broke 200, the unexpected challenge was, you know, mo people, mo problems. And how have you, now that you're running a church of 650 people across a couple locations, and you know, and we may talk about this in a moment or so, but you're getting ready to, you're in a capital campaign, getting ready to construct a brand new facility, that will be built off the back of your existing facility to accommodate further growth. How have you, and when you're the, I'm sorry, I'm taking a long time, 'cause this is like something I'm really wrestling with.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, when you're the point leader, our leadership styles are similar in that we're going to be constantly pointing to our team. We're going to be celebrating others, but you're still the face of the church. You're still And people, they want to talk to you. They want to, they've got burdens, they've got life problems. And how were you able to make sure that you structured your week and structured your time so that you were able to be present and provide pastoral care when needed? You were able to take care of your team. You were able to adequately pray and study to prepare sermons and vision content for your church, and then also remain married to your wonderful wife and take care of your incredible daughter, and then also not just want to go for long walks in the rain by yourself and survive. And I know that's a constant pain point, and unless you're one of those pastors that pastor 48,000 people and you're basically your own general superintendent and you got all kinds of people and you don't have to talk to nobody with cancer or going through a divorce or their toe hurts or their life's falling apart. How do you do that? Gentry, how do you do that? All of the things I said. And not want to drive your car into like a brick wall on a Monday.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm not doing it well enough. Let's just be real. Because it's an ongoing challenge. But
yes,
you have to prioritize your time. And we've heard it said multiple times. You've talked to people on this podcast before that have talked specifically about that. But it's true. And there's a day in the week that it's my reset day. There's no meetings. It's a reset day. It's a refresh day for me. That's a protected day and time for me. My assistant knows that if somebody calls to set up an appointment or whatever, it's off limits. And she then directs them to the days they can meet, which are Tuesdays and Thursdays for me. Those are meeting days. I do make exceptions. There's, you know, if it's something that I know is not going to be too demanding or crazy emotionally, I may do a Wednesday night after, you know, because we have people that drive a distance to be here, some of them an hour and a half. So, you know, I'm trying to be aware of who I'm talking to and what their situation is, and I'll make exceptions here and there. But usually Tuesdays and Thursdays are meeting days. Wednesdays off limit, usually with meetings as far as, you know, people needing counseling and because of prep for Wednesday nights. And then Fridays and Saturdays, I need that for the weekend. And so trying to avoid those meetings during those days too. And then we have continued to empower others that there's a lady in our church who is a tremendous blessing, who has gotten a kind of a lay person certification. It's not, you know, a counseling degree, but it actually is a certification through a counselor and some training that she went through. And so a lot of the ladies have started going to her for counseling, to my wife for counseling. So empowering others to do that and asking people, do you need it to be with me, or are you able to talk to someone else about it? And sometimes they do need to talk with me and my wife, and that's okay. And we'd make that happen. But that's some of the ways that we balance that, you know, because the other thing is too, is when you grow, when you continue to grow, it's very important that you stay refreshed, you stay encouraged, that you don't get too overwhelmed by the cares of life. And there have been weeks where I've told my assistant, no meetings this week. I feel myself at that place of, I need to focus on some other things, or there's a particular subject matter that I need to give more time to, and no meetings this week. And then she can explain to them that reason. And they're very understanding, and I'm thankful for that. There's some times where I have her ask, is this something you have to be in the office for, or can he do a phone call? You know, so just different ways like that to try to help, you know, not be overwhelmed by, mm-hmm. because the need is greater. Again, more people, the need's greater. And there's more people needing to talk, needing counseling, needing guidance, needing Bible studies, you know, wanting to grow spiritually. And that's obviously the priority, right? And
yeah,
so yeah, it's an ongoing challenge.
It's a tension to manage, not a problem to solve.
That's right.
That's what you're saying.
It
sounds like you introduced a gatekeeper, an assistant, so that, you know, you are working through an intermediary, a mediator between your calendar, your time, and you, and that prevented you from having to have the awkward conversation of, no, we can't talk now because I need to go sit in a tree stand so that I keep loving this church on Sunday.
Yeah.
Like it's easier when someone goes, oh, God bless y'all, but Pastor Chantry has another appointment on Friday afternoons. And what that appointment is you have an appointment with not talking to anybody.
Right.
And so that you can get up on Sunday and you don't have your head full of everyone's, you know, life drama and pain that needs to be cared for, but then you got to be the voice of the shepherd to 600 plus people, and you need to have clarity from the presence of the Lord.
That's right.
So you got to pray. It sounds like introducing that gatekeeper was a really important thing once you surged past that 300
It has been a big help.
Okay.
And we've implemented that. We did implement that, once we started hitting, I would say, you know, 275 or so, we started having somebody be that gatekeeper, so to speak. It's a good way to say it.
What were some good things that happened as a result of breaking, you know, 450 and then with the addition of that second campus, 600? Looking at where you are now, what are some of the like really great things that are different from breaking 200 that you're like, man, this is exciting?
I would say it's allowed our church to have a more significant regional impact. You know, we have been able to really, I feel like, reach our community more effectively. I mean, you just have more people in the harvest. And
yeah,
so that's been exciting. You know, there's diversity in perspectives. It's brought a greater diversity of perspectives and experiences into the church, which has enriched the overall, you know, look or tapestry of the congregation. That's exciting.
That is.
To look out and see different ethnicities and, you know, different ages and, you know, have a thriving kids ministry. You know, they have over 100 in that kids ministry, and
it's amazing.
And, so exciting. It's amazing. It's a challenge right now. Our facilities, once again, we're feeling that strain, especially on weeknights, because as you grow, we're having multiple services, but on weeknights, there's one. So yes, you don't have everybody that's there on a Sunday on a weeknight, but we're full and our kids' facilities are full. So, you know, our greatest limiter is space at this point in time. And, you know, we're working towards a resolution for that. But yeah, you know, campus expansion, it's been exciting to see what God is doing at our other campus. They've gone now from one service to two services because they're busting at the seams. And so they've had to go to two services because their building is smaller. And that is just exciting. I mean, but to see the different diversities, the different, you know, levels where people are in their journey, walking with God, and to work with, you know, to see people who have been in this for years excited about working with somebody new. It just, I mean, I've watched people literally get up and give their seat to someone, you know, that's new. And that's a big deal for people that they're not so, you know, this is my seat and my spot. So, I mean, it's like just to even see those little things, and that's health, you know, in a church, and it's exciting. I feel like our community reaches greater. So yeah, I would say that's the most exciting thing, is that I feel like people are excited about being in the harvest. Our reach is greater. Our community is starting to recognize who we are and say, hey, there's something happening there. And to me, that's a very exciting and thrilling thing for our church to be able to see once, you know, because for so long, we were at that 125 mark. We wanted to be doing these things. We wanted to be impacting our community greater. We just had limited resources, limited people. And to see that now, it's just amazing. And it's beautiful. And God has been in it. And it wouldn't have happened without, you know, much prayer, much seeking God. We have built upon a tremendous foundation that's been laid. And it wouldn't have happened without the support of, you know, my father, who was the pastor before me. And way back then, before I was pastor, he saw the vision and the need for help, and he relinquished control, he empowered, and he said, run with it, go for it. You know, I want what God wants. And we began to do what we could do, and God honored that and blessed that. And it's been a beautiful thing to watch. And when my dad came, you know, way back when he came, first came, God gave him the word, don't be weary in well-doing, for in due season you shall reap a harvest if you faint not. I mean, now he's seeing that vision that God gave him when he first came. Yeah. He and my mom are seeing that come to pass and come to fruition.
That must be so exciting.
Oh, it's thrilling. And others that are still in this church that were there from the beginning are seeing the same thing. And that's exciting, you know.
One last question, and that is, what advice would you give to leaders here that are listening today? They're trying to break growth barriers in their own churches.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some principles? And you'll close out the show here with this answer. And so it's like, if there are people here and they're like, man, Chantry, this is amazing. I want to see this happen. I want to see this happen with us. What advice? We've gone through a lot of different things. You've broken two major growth barriers. What advice would you give to those listening right now to help them go break growth barriers in their own church?
Well, first of all, if it can happen for us, it can happen for you. You've got to embrace change as an inevitable part of growth. You know, nothing changes if nothing changes. So you've got to embrace change. It's just a part of growth. But do so thoughtfully and prayerfully. Ensure that each change aligns with the overall vision and mission of the church. Make sure that you have a clearly defined mission for your congregation. And then ensure that each change that you make aligns with that vision and that mission for the church. Regularly evaluate and adjust. We are still tweaking, adjusting, trying to get better at things. You know, we believe God deserves our best, and we try to do everything with excellence. That does not mean we expect perfection. That just means that we are putting our best effort forward in everything we do for the kingdom of God. And so we are regularly evaluating and tweaking and adjusting. So make sure that you do that to align with also that vision. And that mission, you know, flexibility and adaptability, they're crucial components of sustained growth. So you got to be flexible. You got to be adaptable. I'm not talking about the message. Okay.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed there, and it won't. We stay in that word of God. We believe in the gospel of Jesus Christ, the truth. I'm not talking about that. I am talking about methods. Sometimes they need to change, and we need to adapt to our community, because there's different cultures in different communities. We got to be flexible in some areas. You know, as a leader, I had to be flexible. I had to allow others to challenge maybe my thinking, and they didn't do it defiantly, you know, because I was respecting their voice. They obviously respect mine. And so it's a mutual respect, and you got to be flexible and adaptable. Invest in volunteer base, man, huge. Invest in building a strong volunteer base. You know, we have in our Bentonville campus alone, we have a little over 450 people, and we have 250 volunteers. That is a great,
incredible,
great percentage. And that is because we have intentionally invested in building a strong volunteer base. Volunteers are essential to supporting a growing church, and their dedication contributes significantly to the success of various ministries. And so you have got to invest in them. You've got to celebrate them. We have a volunteer appreciation dinner, a big thing that we do that's coming up, actually, beginning of each year. We bring in food. We make it a big night. We do a ton of giveaways. We're thanking them. We're loving on them. And we're, again, clearly defining our vision. You know, at the beginning of each year, we're reminding our teams, and we've got new volunteers to that team. So doesn't matter how many times you say it, there's new people that are joining those teams. They need to hear it. And so we're constantly keeping that in front of them. We have a team huddle every Sunday morning. All the teams come together. We recite our code. We talk about, you know, leadership being a privilege, and serving is an honor, and people, you know, people are our passion. We talk about that. We talk about who we are as a church, you know, our mission, our values. So we're constantly doing that, but we're also praising and thanking them all the time. And I know people say, well, you know, in the church, if people volunteer, they should just want to do it. That's the heartbeat of God, to be a servant. Totally agree. That is true. But when you're a growing and evolving church, and there's so many moving parts, you have to be very intentional to make sure that your volunteers know they are appreciated, because a lot of times they don't get a lot of mentions as you're growing, you know, as you get to certain numbers. So you have to be intentional about that. So investing in that volunteer base, and then stay connected to your congregation's needs by seeking, you know, feedback, tagging in with your team leaders, asking how people are doing, or having them give you a report as you grow. You know, be open to constructive criticism. Prioritize spiritual health. That's the big one. Always prioritize spiritual health over numerical growth. Make sure that you are connected to the life source. Numerical growth should be a byproduct of a healthy, vibrant church community that is deeply rooted in spiritual principles and disciplines. You can't do any of this without prayer, without fasting, without the Word of God. You know, so you have to make sure that even with your teams, that's the priority, staying connected, right, and to the thing that, which is Christ Jesus, that makes all of this work and go. So, you know, those are some things I would say. And to leaders navigating growth barriers, I just emphasize strategic planning, effective delegation, and that continuous adaptation to it all. Invest in those leaders, leadership development. I bring people in to talk to our leaders often. We have, you know, meetings even at my house with our internal team where we're doing a devotion, we're praying together, or we're just simply getting together and having some food and loving on each other and supporting each other. So we do that as well. Foster that culture of collaboration, you know, give people an opportunity to have some ideas and share those ideas. Prioritize the well-being of your staff and volunteers. And just remember, each growth phase brings unique challenges. But with resilient leadership, with much prayer and clear vision, you're going to overcome those challenges and you're going to thrive, and the kingdom of God's going to advance.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. This has been a great growth opportunity for me. Definitely look at your church. And that's, if I were to put a vision board up of where I wanted to be in 7 or 8 years, it would look a whole lot like Bentonville. And
you're doing an amazing job,
and you're a great leader and a great team of people around you. I've become friends with some of your leaders over the past couple of years, and
great team. And you couldn't have done it without
great
them.
People. Oh, yeah. Amazing people.
They are.
And it's so inspiring to see what God has done through you. And so, Chantry, thank you for being on The Restorationist.
It was an honor. Thank you so very much.